The federal government has ruled out a national lockdown to deal with the coronavirus for now, but it has updated its travel advisory to level 4 for the entire world. And Scott Morrison has told shoppers there is no need to go out panic buying amid the coronavirus pandemic. There's now an immediate ban on indoor gatherings of more than 100 people, and there are tougher rules for people visiting aged care facilities. But for the moment, the Prime Minister says schools will remain open.
Whatever we do, we've got to do for at least 6 months. So that means the disruption that would occur from the closure of schools around this country, make no mistake, would be severe. What do I mean by severe? Tens of thousands of jobs could be lost, if not more. The impact on the availability of health workers, a 30% impact on the availability of health workers is our advice. That will put people's lives at risk. So let's keep our heads as parents when it comes to this. Let's do the right thing by the country and by each other and follow the proper advice.
So what will these measures do to help flatten the curve? Dr. Norman Swan is one of the presenters of the ABC's dedicated coronavirus podcast, CoronaCast, and he joins us tonight. Dr. Swan, welcome.
Hi, Patricia.
What is the thinking around the government's announcements today? From a health perspective, what are the principles here?
What they're trying to do is there's no on or off here, but let's just start with the off. Let's assume you do nothing with this epidemic. What will happen is a large number of people will die. So in the United Kingdom's context, from a modelling done yesterday, it would be 500,000 people would die in the UK, 2.2 million would die in the United States. But the epidemic would be over very quickly because it would burn itself out. 80% of people would be infected. We're not going to do that. It's so hard to contemplate. You just would not do it. It'd be inhumane. It's not what you would do in a civilized society where we've got resources we have. The question then is, how tough do you get about it? And they talk on a continuum between what's called mitigation and suppression. And it's not one or the other. It's a continuum. So at mitigation, you're doing one or two things. You might be doing social distancing to some extent, contact tracing, quarantine, and so on. And what this modelling did was show just what a sort of effect that you get. Now, I'll come back to the schools in a minute. Britain, well, what you're hearing in the United States is lockdown in New York, for example. Well, the reason for that is they haven't had testing. They don't know how much is out there, and they look like they're facing an Italian disaster. And that's why they've gone into lockdown now. What we're doing here is we've got a few hundred cases. It is doubling every 4 or 5 days. It's worrying. And the line is going up in New South Wales pretty vertically. And the line in Victoria is starting to go up, and it's a few days behind New South Wales. And the other states are a bit better off as well. I'm not sure about Queensland. So what they're doing is playing with risk. And I don't say that trivially, but the Prime Minister was actually underestimating the impact. What this modelling shows from London is that it could be 18 months that this is in place, because the only thing that saves you here is either a vaccine or you get lucky and it's a seasonal virus and it goes away in the northern summer and it'll go away in our summer. But we don't know that yet. And so if you're not lucky and it's not seasonal, and there's no vaccine for 12 to 18 months, the lockdown could last that long. So what they're doing here is, because we don't have thousands of cases yet, but it is going vertically, they're saying, well, what happens if we just tap the brake pedal here, rather than put it down hard? Now, these measures, let me just take them one by one. The travel one is good, because that means we're not going to get more importation of cases from overseas, which has been a major source. The meetings of over 100 and 500 outside, that's arbitrary. And I think a lot of people are already changing their behaviour. They're staying at home from work and they're not going out to cafes and so on. And you talk to people in shopping centres, people aren't going out shopping. So already the public's ahead of the government here, and they're already behaving as if there's almost a bit of a lockdown. And that's a good thing, because the more you go out, the more you're actually being exposed. So then you're left. And the aged care is about, that's about saving lives. So not going into aged care homes is about saving the lives of the vulnerable elderly and taking the pressure off the system. So then you're left with schools and universities, which is a really difficult decision to make. So Singapore hasn't shut them. Hong Kong has.
And the Prime Minister, you mentioned Singapore, said we want to be like Singapore, but they've done a few other things, haven't they, Norman?
Yeah, they're very aggressive about contact tracing. They're using street cameras, CCTV, to help with contact tracing. So very aggressive. So two ways, the mathematical modeling internationally shows the same thing. There's only two ways to control this epidemic. We're back in 1918. One is social distancing, so you keep away from other people. But then the other one is that you identify people who are infected, you identify the people they've come in contact with, and you ring fence that. And what they're doing additionally in some parts of the world, then they're finding where there might be a cluster. Like, for example, in Northwest Sydney, there's been a cluster, but we haven't done very much about that. What they would do in some parts of the world is that they'd ring fence that cluster, maybe in a 5 kilometre radius, and really hit that area of the city hard with a lot of testing and try and control it there, and then move out after a few days once they've got it under control. Those sorts of active, that's how you do it. And by the way, that's why you ban the Grand Prix and football games, because not only are you more likely to come across somebody with a virus, if you catch the virus at one of those games, it's impossible to contact trace. And that's one of that's the core way we're doing that. So what we're trying to do here in Australia is say, well, we'll just do that light touch. Let's see if we can get better. Let's hope we don't run out of test kits and see whether this vertical line that's going at the moment, this doubling rate, we can slow that down and bend the curve. And they haven't got long to, they can't wait very long. I mean, if they're not bending the curve by the end of this week or the beginning of next week, they are actually going to have to clamp down because it will spin out of control and contact tracing will be really hard. So I think it's reasonable at the moment to wait another 3 or 4 days, maybe even 5 days, just to see what happens. But if it's not slowing down then they've got to do something. Now, the problem for the public is this is not visible to people. It's me surmising what's going on. They are seeing the graphs and they should be sharing them with the public. The public's not going to panic about this. In fact, it becomes an objective. Everybody will get together and say, we've got to bend the curve and we've got to do stuff. And this is what we've got to do. And the Australians will pull together on it. We are not, we're listening to press conferences and so on. Well-meaning people, the Prime Minister wants to do the right thing. Nobody wants to do a bad job here. Nobody wants to see an epidemic. But you know, we are focused on the economy. If we solve the public health problem, we'll solve the economic problem. And we're not doing enough to bring the public with us, is what I think at the moment. This week is a much better week for the government and the system than last week. Last week was a shambles. So it's getting better, but they've got to be much more transparent than they are.
So this strategy, this suppression strategy, what will it mean for the duration of that curve as they've articulated it today, as it stands?
Well, they're saying 6 months, but they don't know that. It could be 18 months. It could be 12 months. It could be less than that if the virus gets sensitive to temperature and disappears, if we have a warm winter. They don't know. What they're scared of, and what we should all be sobering us, is that you don't know when you can lift your foot off the pedal. And the worry is China, because they've just thrown out, as you would know, PK, they've thrown out New York Times journalists, Washington Post journalists out of Hubei province. And so we don't have transparent reporting and we don't know whether we can trust the data coming out of China, because they're lifting the foot off the pedal. Only 1% of the Chinese population have been infected with this. 99% are vulnerable. They could lift it off and they could get a really severe second wave. So it's this second wave that scares people, because you don't know. So what the British group that did this modelling suggests you could do is put a foot on the pedal for a while, maybe 3 or 4 months, and then pulse it. Take your foot off the pedal for a little while, you know, 3 or 4 days, 5 days, a week, and see whether it jumps back. And if it doesn't jump back, keep it off the pedal. And then if it starts to come back, you put your foot back on the pedal again. So you test it out. But that's a risky strategy as well. There are things that you can do, but though this is unknown territory.
All of it is so unknown.
I know. And I was looking around the other day and I was thinking, people just don't realise they kind of do, but this profound change, we will remember this year for the rest of our lives. This is going to be an extraordinary, disturbing year where wonderful things will happen, communities will come together, but it's going to be a profoundly troubling year as well.
It is profoundly troubling. Very briefly, how important will the seasonal flu vaccine be now? Because there has been that concern around both of these viruses at the same time.
Seasonal flu vaccine, we all need to get it, because you, first of all, it unloads the emergency departments, so you don't get the emergency departments flooded with people with influenza. Because this is a lot of this is about access to intensive care, ventilation, heart-lung bypass. That's what this is about, and getting that access and allowing other people into the system with other conditions that get treated in the system. That's what a lot of this is about, as well as deaths. So that's the first thing. Everybody should get immunized to save yourself. You don't want to get both at the same time, but equally, you don't want to turn up in an emergency department unnecessarily. The other immunization that people should think about is the pneumococcal vaccine for bacterial pneumonia. Now, only certain groups in the community can get it free: Aboriginal communities, older people over age 65, but anybody can get it if you're willing to pay for it. And bacterial pneumonia does complicate viral infections like COVID-19. So that's the other immunizations you get. So in other words, protect yourself when you can. And the other thing is that if you've got heart disease, diabetes, asthma, and so on, get it under control with your GP so that these so-called comorbidities are controlled and you're as fit as you can be.
Always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome, PK.
Dr. Norman Swan is one of the presenters of the ABC's dedicated coronavirus podcast, CoronaCast. And I reckon if you are a regular listener here on RN, you are already a subscriber to CoronaCast. If you're not, you are missing out. It is worth subscribing to. This is RN Drive.